My guest at this time is Pete Hegseth. He is the CEO at Concerned Veterans for America. He is also a veteran of the U.S. Army, served in the 101st Airborne Division, is also a veteran of the Iraq War, and was there during some of the heaviest fighting during the insurgencies in and around the area of Samarra during some of the hardest fighting during the war. We've asked him to join us today to offer his reaction to the very disturbing news coming out of Iraq. We've known for months now that Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups were on the march in Anbar province. We learned earlier this week they have essentially taken over the second-largest city in the country of Mosul. The Iraqi military seems to be falling apart at the seams, and a humanitarian crisis is afoot, in addition to the fact that these radicals seem now to be headed towards Samarra and towards Baghdad eventually. And Pete, despite that grim news, it's good to have you with us. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
As a veteran of Iraq and someone who knows firsthand and certainly is aware of veterans who gave so much in this effort, your reaction and the reaction of others you have talked to in the last few days as they and you see what's been happening here and everything you fought for seeming to be slipping away to some extent?
Yeah, I mean, universal utter dismay and anger from veterans and those who have served to see what's unfolding before our eyes in Iraq, which really is one of the greatest foreign policy failures in a long time, to sort of see the progress that we made and then watch it be given away is dismaying. I mean, the implications strategically are vast. I mean, we were so close. We were creating the conditions for a stable and strong and freer Iraq. Not a perfect one, but one that would at least protect America's interests and ensure radicals were not able to find safe harbor there. And then instead, this administration was more obsessed with ending the war than winning it or being successful. And as a result, now that we've turned the page, we've looked away from Iraq, and insurgents have taken advantage of it, and not just regular old insurgents, but very well-equipped, ideologically dedicated members of the Islamic State of Iraq and of Iraq and Syria, which is an offshoot of al-Qaeda. In fact, a more radical element of al-Qaeda. Not only have they taken Anbar province, but they very strategically enveloped Baghdad by going to Mosul and then down to Beji and to Tikrit into Samarra, where I serve, and they're on the outskirts of Baghdad right now, in a very concerted fashion, holding and taking ground, which shows how sophisticated they are.
Pete, obviously the Obama administration followed the general timetable laid out by the Bush administration towards the end of his administration. The big difference, of course, is that there was no status of forces agreement when everybody left at the end of 2011. Everybody really did leave. Explain how the situation could be different if there had been a residual force there.
Just a residual force, Greg, would it's less about the force and more about the signal that this is a regime, this is a country that will have continued emphasis and focus from the United States of America, and an understanding in the enemies of that state that they were not going to have the ability to challenge the Iraqi military. It also would incentivize Iraqi politicians to find political solutions to problems as opposed to some of the things Maliki has done to bring this about. Maliki's marginalized Sunnis and their participation in the government in ways that we headed off very well when we had an influence there. But when you leave nobody behind, you lose any moniker of influence and leverage to affect the situation. So right now in Iraq, you've got factions going back at war with each other, with the U.S. having almost nothing, no leverage to impact it. And as a result, our security is at risk because you've got a caliphate forming between Syria and Iraq and an inability to affect the outcome.
There's a report in the New York Times, I believe on Wednesday, but might have even been on Thursday, that Prime Minister Maliki requested airstrikes, or at least asked the Obama administration to consider airstrikes when he saw the advances that these radical Islamists were making. Ultimately, the Obama administration seems to have no interest in doing so. What do you make of that decision?
What I make of that decision is that, to be honest, and it sounds harsh, and I don't like to make blunt statements like this, but I don't think the Obama administration cares. Their only interest in Iraq has been to end the war, turn the page, and talk about how they don't support it. So at this point, there's no will, there's no appetite, there's no strategic thinking to re-engage in Iraq, even though, I mean, what's happening right now is a reestablishment of an even more dangerous element than even you saw in some ways in the Taliban era in Afghanistan, folks who want a space from which to form a state and then project jihad, not just regionally, but around the world. So it is incredibly short-sighted to see this administration sort of thumb their nose at developments and say, well, this just isn't our fight. The problem is it has been our fight for a long time, and we ignore it at our peril, and I send my four-year-old off to fight a war decades from now because there's unfinished business.
Pete, what is the right response here, given all the conditions we currently face right now? And the American public certainly isn't going to have appetite for too much, but what is the right response here?
Boy, it is a complicated, the right response it's a complicated situation. The right response would be to go back and establish terms with the Iraqi government about some sort of a support, but it would be contingent upon Maliki taking certain steps not to marginalize Sunnis and walking back some of the things he's done. We still have to do what we can to find more secular elements of the rebels in Syria, with they're always understanding the risk of weapons falling in the hands of the wrong people. There are very few good options here, Greg, very few good options. And we've backed ourselves into a corner. I think the best response is to project strength rhetorically first about what we will and will not tolerate, and then where we can, putting our thumb on the scales to support the good guys. And that requires intelligence in Iraq right now that we don't really have. So immediate support for the regime there, I think, is important to make sure Baghdad does not fall. And then from there, looking at ways we can push back advances that the enemy has made.
What do you think will actually happen?
I think the most likely and unfortunate scenario is that there's a stalemate, much like there is in Syria right now, with outside of Aleppo and Damascus and elsewhere in eastern Syria and now in western Iraq. You're going to have effectively a non-state state between Assad and Maliki that the international community is unwilling to confront, and neither regime is strong enough to defeat. So I think the most likely status quo is this quasi-state in the middle continuing to threaten both regimes with unfolding civil war, with humanitarian crisis on both sides of the border, and diminished international will to address it. Because without American leadership, none of this is going to change. And instead, and over time, you're going to have entrenched interests and entrenched ability to defend those particular positions. So a bad status quo or a bad stalemate is probably the most likely scenario, and it's a really bad one.
Pete, you mentioned some of the political calculations you believe are at work here, that the administration simply wanted out at whatever way they could get that done, and that they perhaps don't even care right now about what's going on in Iraq. From the other side of the political spectrum, you're more than likely to hear the argument, well, if Bush hadn't taken us in there in the first place, none of this would have happened. And if we had a residual force there, eventually it would have to be removed and we'd see this eventually. What do you say to those folks?
I don't think you would have to inevitably see this eventually. In places where we've kept residual forces, and I know there's different cultures, and I understand the cultural dynamics of a South Korea and a Germany vis-a-vis Iraq and Afghanistan, but I think a sustained, modest commitment that demonstrates U.S. support for finishing what we've started can create the seeds for a positive outcome that doesn't have to look like it does right now. The rush to get to zero is the problem, Greg. It's not about a long, sustained, massive occupation or presence. It's about the optics and the presentation that America stands behind the investment we've made and the commitments we've made and are willing to see it through to the future. I don't grant that inevitably down the line it would descend into civil war. I just don't. I think Iraq had the seeds for the foundation of representative government, not Jeffersonian perfect American looking representative government, but something where resolution was found through politics and not through the battlefield is possible. So I think Iraq, frankly, is somewhere where it was more likely to happen, where a stable outcome is more likely to happen than Afghanistan, which is the irony of Iraq being the bad war in everyone's eyes and Afghanistan being the good war. At least Iraq has the seeds of a civil society, an educated populace, infrastructure, a history of central governance. All the things that we're seeing crumbling before our eyes right now could have been shepherded through American commitment, but instead they're slipping away.
Last topic. It's obviously been a pretty difficult stretch the last few weeks for veterans of your age and other ages. You've seen the VA scandal. You've got the very controversial Bergdahl swap for the five Taliban figures, and now what appears to be the unraveling of Iraq. What's it like for you and your veteran friends to watch all of these kind of happen simultaneously?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly frustrating, but it's also a validation of what we've suspected. I mean, at the VA, we've known there's been problems where there's smoke, there is fire, and thankfully we're able to lean forward and play a central role in reforming the Department of Veterans Affairs. My organization, Concerned Veterans for America, has been central to advocating for accountability and more choice for veterans in the Department of Veterans Affairs. And I think we've been effective in working with folks across the aisle to make something possible. But when it comes to a Bergdahl swap or watching Iraq fade away, you feel helpless as you watch the things that you've invested in, that you've given so much in, that were so critical, we believe, to America's national security. Controversial, yes, but how you finish things matter, regardless of whether the merits of how they were started. And to watch the Bergdahl swap in Iraq, it's a rough time for veterans of those conflicts, and I think has given me a better understanding of how Vietnam veterans felt when Saigon fell. When even though Baghdad hasn't fallen, and neither is Kabul, our commitment is waning and the enemy remains on the march, and that's a bad equation.
Pete, we'll have to leave it at that grim note. Thank you very much for your time today, as always.
Thanks, Greg.
Pete Hegseth is CEO at Concerned Veterans for America. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.